This is a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
China is saying Yankee go home to all American toxic waste.
Now, for decades, China has served as a dumping ground for several developed nations.
China has decided it no longer wants to be the world's rubbish collector.
It's a hard way to make a living. The smell here is unbearable.
5 months into the ban, what has been the impact on the rest
Trash
of the world?
And recycling is a big business in China.
The country declared it would largely close its doors to the world's waste.
An unexpected development for many.
What you are about to hear is a tale of one trash can and two systems. We're going to find out what happened when two greater Chinese cities, Taipei and Hong Kong, took very different approaches to recycling and waste disposal, and how that brought vastly different results. You're going to find out that this song means very different things, depending on whether you're in Taiwan or Hong Kong. And you're going to find out about a group of senior citizens who form a crucial part of the recycling ecosystem. And this ecosystem might just be in danger of collapse thanks to the impact of China's national sword policy. You're listening to China's Recycling Revolution. I'm Laurie Chen. In our previous episode, we went to Shanghai and heard how it's being used as a testbed for how a city with a population of 26 million people can change its behaviour and bring in a new system of sorting its domestic waste for recycling, composting, or incineration. In this episode, we're going to delve into how Taiwan and Hong Kong have dealt with recycling, because there's a lot we can learn from both of their experiences. Before I start, let me give you a 30-second recap of the past 70 years of geopolitics to help understand the China-Hong Kong and Taiwan relationship. The People's Republic of China was established in 1949. However, Beijing has not ruled the island of Taiwan for the past 70 years. Taiwan, which has its own government and army, is seen by Beijing as a renegade province that must be brought back to the mainland's fold, even by force, if necessary. Beijing has suggested that reunification with Taiwan can happen in a way similar to Hong Kong, which returned to the mainland in 1997 under the One Country, Two Systems model, after over a century of British rule. Today, Hong Kong is a special administrative region of the People's Republic of China, with its own mini-constitution, government, judiciary, and economy. Now, the year 1997 is important, not just because Hong Kong officially ceased to be a British colony and became a special administrative region of China, but because it's the year Taiwan and Hong Kong embarked on two different journeys to deal with their waste. In 1997, Taipei chose to start incinerating trash and moved towards the five R's of waste: reduce, recycle, reuse, repair, and redesign. There are 24 incinerators across the island of Taiwan, including three massive incinerators which deal specifically with Taipei's trash. Hong Kong, however, decided it didn't need an incinerator. It was going to get rid of its trash in one of two ways: put it on a barge and send it up the Pearl River to mainland China to be sold, or it would dump it in one of three landfills. 17 years later, in the year 2014, there were two announcements from the two islands. The Taipei government announced it had achieved the goal of zero material going into landfill. And the government in Hong Kong announced it was expanding its three landfills, just 1 year after a report announced they would be full by 2019. So, here we are in 2019, and the standard Taipei resident now generates an average of 77 grams of trash per day. The average Hong Konger? They throw out 18 times that amount. Each person in Hong Kong generates 1.4 kilograms of trash every day. That's just over 3 pounds. The average American generates about 4.6 pounds per day. What happened?
Okay, I'm Michelle. Thank you for inviting. I'm Michelle Falk.
This is Michelle Falk. She works as a consultant in corporate sustainability, But not too long ago, she was a PhD student in environmental science policy.
I did a thesis on the waste management strategy of Taiwan and Hong Kong.
And what she found specifically in Taipei was a culture of recycling that starts each night with a song.
Taipei's trash never touched the ground. And this is not only about the government policy, it's also about the infrastructure. There is also the recycling truck. So every night, well, basically every night, they have different type of recyclables to be collected in their truck. So they will go around in the streets of the Taipei neighborhood and having these green sleeve song on. And then people, when they hear the song, they will just rush off through the trucks. And then you can literally see people running after a truck to get their recyclables put into the truck. So it is a very fascinating image to me.
Where you are in the world will depend on what you're thinking when you hear this song. It is, of course, one of the most instantly recognizable English folk songs, composed in the year 1580. And it was also voted by British people as one of the most infuriating songs ever to hear when making a phone call and being put on hold. But if you're American or Australian, you might just be experiencing a Pavlovian reaction right now and finding yourself thinking about ice cream. Because it's been the song of choice for ice cream trucks for generations. But for people like Michelle, who grew up in Hong Kong, it means something else entirely.
For us, green sleeves in Hong Kong means examination. So an examination song went on between your listening exams. So your break time would be a green sleeve song. So it's quite funny to hear that in Taiwan. And it's something positive to me. Just do recycling with a song.
In Taipei, recycling is not just about a truck playing a song. That song is the cornerstone of a sophisticated system based on the days of the week.
People are quite clear about the arrangement, and they know what to recycle every day. For the odd days, Monday, Friday, they have old clothes. Sometimes they have a paper as well, like paper bags and paper boxes. Yes, and also some, again, plastic bags as well. On Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, they have plastic bottles, small electronic appliances. They have, well, for example, paper and paper products, say the milk boxes. On different days, they have different items to be collected.
It wasn't as simple as driving a cute truck playing a folk song, though. What Michelle found was the Buddhist teachings of respecting the cycle and balance of nature for future generations helped inspire a network of religious and community groups who formed NGOs, non-government organizations, to assist neighborhoods with their recycling.
And apart from the recycling truck, there's also, I think, the stakeholders involved are very important, is the behavioral change after the waste management policy applied. The waste charging scheme applied. Around, I think, 35% of the Taipei people are Buddhism, and then they this religion somehow highlights the natural environment.
But even before the residents of Taipei hear that song played on their street, they're thinking of what they're putting in their bins. And this is really the core reason why Taiwan has one of the highest recycling rates in the world. Now, depending on where you live, you might be familiar with a fee or even an outright ban on plastic bags being given to shoppers at retail stores. Taipei has a very special approach to one particular type of plastic bag. It's the one you put your trash in. Michelle's research picked up a huge drop in waste generated per person in Taipei in the year 2000, and she found the reason why.
What made that significant drop is the government policy, which is the waste charging scheme. The government go on to charge people per bag. So when you go to the supermarket and buy a rubbish bin bag, you are charged per liter and it's around less than $10 per bag. So people started to think about what they trash in the rubbish bin.
Let me recap and convert that for our American listeners. Let's round that figure up to 10 Hong Kong dollars per litre for a 5-litre bag. That's about $1.30 US for a 1-gallon trash bag. If you were to buy the standard American 13-gallon plastic rubbish bag, the government would be taxing you $8 for the bag.
People begin to do recycling because they don't want an extra plastic bottle get into their 3-litre rubbish bin bag to fill up the space.
So let me take you to the streets of Hong Kong, where the only music from the vehicles are the bells of the trams and the horns of frustrated drivers. Here, the shop owners and restaurant owners have their own daily ritual. Each night, they gather all the cardboard, polystyrene boxes and plastic for recycling and dump it on the sidewalk. Soon enough, an elderly person pushing a trolley will come by and pick it up. This lady is asking you to make way for her and the trolley she's pushing on the sidewalk. In Hong Kong, these people are known as Zipei Popo, cardboard grannies. There's an estimated 3,000 people doing this job. 80% of them are women, all over the age of 60. That's probably why they're not called the cardboard elderly. The oldest known cardboard granny is 96 years old. They flatten the cardboard boxes, pile up the plastic, and push their fully laden trolleys to nearby recycling facilities, where they are paid by the weight of what they have collected.
I'm Sister Lan. I've been collecting cardboard for over 20 years. What made me do this? At that time, my life wasn't that good. The factory where I was working had no job for me. So I started collecting cardboard. I usually pick up around Chi Phong Street. I start every day at 6 a.m., rest a bit at noon, and work until 10 or 11 p.m.
Collectively, Sister Lam and the cardboard grannies of Hong Kong are responsible for recycling an estimated 196 tons of cardboard every day. That's about 20% of the entire amount of cardboard recycled daily in Hong Kong.
Sometimes there's a lot of cardboard, sometimes not too much. I walk from here to the recycle shop 6 times a day, back and forth. I earn about $30 a day.
That's about $3 a day. If Sister Lan takes an hour-long lunch break, that works out to be about 27 US cents per hour. She takes that money and adds it to Hong Kong's pitiful old age living allowance, which is a payment of about $330 per month.
I don't think it's good to just sit at home. If I don't work, I'll have pain all over my body. The pain is gone when I come out to work. I'm born to work. I'll work until the day I cannot work. I'll retire when I have no energy to push the cart.
Sister Lan might well be happy to walk the streets of Hong Kong in the rain or stifling heat for 15 or 16 hours each day to collect cardboard. But something well beyond her control is changing all that. Because Hong Kong's entire plastic, cardboard and paper recycling economy was based on packing it up and selling it to mainland China. And China's national sword policy has put an end to that. Just ask this man, Jackson Lau.
Hi, my name is Jackson. I'm the third generation of Lau Chai Kee Waste Paper Company. And here is the facility.
The facility we're in is a small, cramped office in the corner of a yard in Shangshui, only a few kilometers from Hong Kong's border with mainland China.
We collect all the waste from waste paper, mallows, and plastic.
The yard is packed with giant bales of PET bottles, plastics, and cardboard, stacked in some places 10 and 20 feet high. Inside, it's a cramped but comfy office, with Jackson's mother sitting behind him at another desk, tapping away at a calculator doing the books, while his wife sits at a window watching and waiting for customers. Cardboard grannies like Sister Lan.
That old lady, every day will walk around the street, usually they have some stores that they cooperate with, because the store have a lot of cardboard, and then they just don't want to hire an extra person to handle that. They will just throw it all in front of the store. They will cooperate with the old lady. Then he said, okay, you help me to clean up all the garbage and within the cardboard inside. And then the old lady will go walk around, and then when they see the cardboard is outside, and then they use a cutter to cut it and then put it in a flat and then stack it on their cart, and then to collect the cardboard, and then they will send it here and sell it to us.
But Jackson can see a major problem coming for this unofficial recycling service in Hong Kong.
The Chinese government are going to stop importing the waste paper in 2021. And then before that, from 2018, they're decreasing the import license for 40% per year.
And with a complete ban on waste paper exports to mainland China just 2 years away, right now, Jackson is finding it tougher and tougher to find buyers for Hong Kong's cardboard and paper.
We will have a competition with all over the world, including US, including Europe, including everywhere in the world. So we have we don't have much advantage for that, because our paper, the quality, let's say for the US paper, they make from wood for that, right? But in Hong Kong, maybe half of that use of wood, half of that is from China. The China cardboard is recycled. So the fiber inside is not good for a paper mill to use it. That's why I say quality is not as good as the US waste paper.
The price is dropping. The market is shrinking. His competitors have a higher quality product. And in 2 years, Jackson Lau won't be able to pay the cardboard grannies for the cardboard they bring to him. And they won't have any incentive to pick up the cardboard from Hong Kong streets. But for plastic, it's another story.
Actually, I think the Chinese government stopped importing the waste from overseas is really a good policy, because they need to find a way to do their own stuff and clean their own leftover. But in Hong Kong, we are facing some problem, because we have less land to do. So I think plastic is a little bit easier to compare with the waste paper to solve in Hong Kong. Then we can make our own pallets, and then maybe we can, for further step, we can make some end products in Hong Kong too by using that.
Jackson is talking about plastic pellets, taking specific types of plastic and breaking it down into the small pellets accepted under the new national sword restrictions and sold to Chinese companies. He takes us for a walk into the yard of his Shengshui facility. And shows us, way up the back, a machine being operated in the stifling Hong Kong heat by four mostly shirtless men.
As you can see, the workers put their firm on the conveyor and then go through and then drop into the crusher and crush it to the little pieces, and then it will go through the melting machine, and then they'll mix it and then melt it and then mix it well, and then go through the filter, and then they'll go to the second melting machine and then do the same thing, and then filter again, then it'll go through a water pool to cool it down. Cool it down, and then to a cutter, to cut it in the little cut. This is the pallets that wait to send it back to China.
This is the new regime for sending plastic back to China. Taking plastic film, which is one of the biggest sources of plastic waste, cleaning it, processing it, and breaking it down into tiny pellets. But mainland China is not his only customer. We're walking through his yard and come to bales of plastic disposable water bottles, PET bottles. These bales are stacked about 12 feet high.
1 kilogram is like 35, around 35 bottles, and then 1 ton is around 35,000. 1 ton is like, it's around 35,000 bottles. So it's here is 4 tons. It's more than 140,000 bottles. For the PET right now, we send it to the German. Yeah, I don't know why, but they have a customer that buy from Germany. And usually we have five to six containers per month. So here is like two containers right now.
The hard truth is, Jackson Lau might be selling a few tons of PET bottles to Germany, but Hong Kong throws away 5.2 million plastic water bottles per day. And now it can't send them to mainland China. The clock is ticking on how much longer Hong Kong can dump its waste into its fast-filling dumps. It took 14 years for Taiwan to change the behaviour of its population and achieve zero landfills. In Hong Kong, the government has spent 14 years discussing whether it should ask its population to separate recyclables from non-recyclables, still debating whether a waste charging system should be in place, and it still hasn't made a decision. But there are others who are taking the initiative.
Hello, I'm Philippe Li from Hong Kong Recycles.
Philippe and his company are trying to teach Hong Kong to recycle without the aid of a catchy song or the tenets of Buddhism.
Hong Kong Recycles is a social enterprise with three main objectives. So the first objective is to divert recyclable waste away from Hong Kong's free landfills and into the hands of the recyclers. The second is that we hire people from marginalized communities in Hong Kong as our full-time collector. So, and then lastly, our ultimate objective is to be financially sustainable so that the business model is proven by the market, but at the same time, we can continue our socio-economic impacts in Hong Kong.
Philippe spends a lot of time explaining to major companies why they should start recycling, and his approach is to look at the business angle rather than the emotional side.
I don't try to make them guilty because that's not the way to go, I think. I think the way to go is actually unpack it and find the nuances in the problems. And so the first thing is, you know, why do people ship waste across the world? And it's purely because of economic reasons. Because of globalization, the cost of recycling stuff, actually processing the items into its raw materials, is very expensive in the developed world. So naturally speaking, if you're entrepreneurial, then you will capture that opportunity and open a factory in somewhere that's cheaper, i.e. cheaper labor costs, cheaper land costs, more lax regulation. And sometimes that actually is not good for the workers' welfare and the environment, but actually that's the only sustainable way to recycle these items. Because if you look at it, right, at the end of the day, when you recycle some products or some materials like plastics, it then becomes a product which you have to resell, find buyers to buy.
And he's touching on an uncomfortable truth about Hong Kong. After their 2015 study into marine plastic pollution shocked the world, Professor Jenna Jambek and her team from the University of Georgia published another study in 2018. This one was titled
The Chinese Import Ban and Its Impact on the Global Plastic Waste Trade.
It revealed that
collectively, China and Hong Kong have imported 72.4% of all plastic waste. However, Hong Kong acts as an entry point into China, with 63% of the plastic waste imported to Hong Kong going directly to China as an export in 2016.
But that was before the national sword. Jambek's report estimates that the cumulative amount of plastic now being diverted away from China is close to 150 million metric tons. And Philippe can tell you about another impact on plastics recycling in Hong Kong, driven by bigger global influences.
So prior to the financial crisis, there's a lot of, you know, these informal collectors, or actually formal collectors, who goes to your building, like an office or a home or a complex, and collects materials for free. That actually includes, you know, plastics, include paper and metal. But after the financial crisis, the demand for manufacturing decreased, and then the crude oil prices also decreased. So what that means is the value of recycled plastics is actually on par with virgin plastics, which means that if you're a manufacturer, you might actually go for the virgin plastics. It is as cheap, the quality is, could be better, and there's less risk. So what that means is for Hong Kong is that for the plastic recyclers, there is no more value for them to come and collect your items, your plastic items. So if the plastic recyclers come and collect your plastic for free, the cost of collection is actually higher than the revenue they can get from selling the plastics and processing the plastics.
So what about the future for Hong Kong? It can no longer send its waste to mainland China. Its landfills are filling up.
So in 2021, we hopefully will be charged for throwing waste. That is the fundamental building block for any good waste management system. So if you look at Germany, the UK, Japan, Taiwan, there is a waste charging scheme. But in Hong Kong right now, there isn't. And so that is extremely important.
And why is that important?
A waste charging scheme actually incentivizes companies and individuals to recycle more. Right now, when I speak to companies, when Hong Kong Recycle speaks to companies, there is no reason why they should be recycling. And the reason is throwing away waste is free. But if a waste charging comes in, then recycling will be a cost-effective option for them, perhaps, because, you know what, they might be actually saving money by diverting waste away from Hong Kong's landfill to the recycling plants. So that is extremely important.
The Hong Kong Legislative Council has been debating a waste charging scheme for the past 14 years. And last year, in November, it finally agreed to trial the same system that Taiwan began in the year 2000. The designated trash bags that Hong Kongers will buy will cost 1 US cent per litre. The Hong Kong government has suggested it will take 12 to 18 months for stakeholders to prepare for the new system. But so far, nothing has been legislated. There's something else Taiwan has been doing for decades that Hong Kong stopped doing in 1997. In 1997, Hong Kong closed down its last solid waste incinerator. In 2008, it announced it would build a new waste-to-energy incinerator on a tiny island 22 kilometres southwest of Hong Kong Island. In 2015, it agreed to a building plan, and in 2017, it issued a contract worth $3 billion to build it. And that's about the last anyone has heard of it.
So if you actually, again, look at the whole life cycle analysis of an item, having an incinerator could be good because the items can be burnt and the energy released from that combustion is captured and reused. And if you look at the fact that Hong Kong uses coal power, that makes it quite attractive. But then that would depend on what type of incinerator we have. Unfortunately, I don't know what types it is, how efficient it is, you know, how much air pollutant it can block out. But globally speaking, there is technologies that can remove quite a lot of these pollutants. So in fact, it could be good or it could be worse. I can't tell you that.
November 2017 was when the last press release about the incinerator was issued by the Hong Kong government. The company's website has a timeline which states the facility will be undergoing testing through 2018 and 2019 and will come online this year. We've checked and we can confirm as yet nothing has been built. There's only some dredging of sand for the site to build an artificial island where the incinerator will be built. Just 2 years ago, Hong Kong was the second biggest receiver of the world's plastic waste after mainland China. But now it's increasingly hard to export it to anywhere else in the region. And there's even less room for the waste being generated by its residents. What are we going to do with all this plastic? That's up next in China's recycling revolution.